welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake, right between Pine Grove and Oasis exits. Go up and see them. They've got everything you need for John Deere's. They work on all makes. We've got a full parts department, service department, sales department. They do it all up there. Or you can give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226. Or you can get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
And, you know, I was talking to somebody who works in that industry, and they said, you know, one of the biggest problems they face is people trying to fix stuff themselves.
Is that right?
Yeah, and then they get it all screwed up.
And then they bring it in a box.
Well, yeah.
You know, that is, I got to say, it's never happened.
And it costs extra. And it costs extra for that.
Yeah, it does cost extra. If you got something broke, just bring it in. We'll fix it for you. Don't bring it in a box and say, here, can you
don't
fix it?
Don't blow my cover. I was doing anonymous.
Oh.
I was going with the anonymous report.
Oh, sorry.
Wow.
Anonymous street report.
Bill's career as a CIA agent is completely blown.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I'm not on my game today. You'll have to kind of walk me through it.
Yeah, yeah. Full disclosure, if we go silent briefly, it's just because we're probably coughing, and we had to have her mute us. We've been hanging out in the sick zone since.
Yeah, we've been sick bay for a week and a half. That's,
oh, no. It was Christmas Day.
Yeah.
We've lost two holidays now.
Oh, has it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we lost two holidays.
I've kind of been in a cloud for that long. I don't know how many days it's been.
Total waste. Ridiculous. But.
Yeah.
Our
guests, feels good to be out.
It does.
First day out in 10 days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. We got dressed and everything. So our
wow. Put our clothes on and everything. Hey, we got shoes on.
Announcements for radio, huh?
Yeah.
We have clothes on. I didn't want to miss this week because our guest, Stephen Moore, is a super busy guy, and he is headed back to Ukraine. And if we didn't catch up with him, then he would be off doing his work, and then we wouldn't learn anything. So we figured, hey, you know what? Sick bay. There's bigger things going on. There's a whole war. We can get out of sick bay for a war, for heaven's sakes.
That's right.
And so a little bit about him. Stephen Moore is a political strategist, international social entrepreneur, and public opinion researcher with experience in more than a dozen countries, including Iraq, East Timor, the Republic of Congo, and now Ukraine. Kind of a little variety there. Moore spent 7 years as a chief of staff and senior leadership aide in the U.S. Congress, developing relationships with senior policymakers across the United States and around the world. On day 5 of the war in Ukraine, he founded the Ukraine Freedom Project, and you'll find that linked up on our site here today, which solves difficult problems in the Ukraine in areas not well served by the international organizations, and he educates U.S. policymakers with firsthand information about the situation on the ground. He's been profiled by numerous media, including, but not limited to, Politico, Business Insider, Roll Call, Washington Examiner, and others. And today is January 7th, 2024. Spoiler alert there, in case we re-air this, which I'm sure we will. But here on January 7th, 2024, I have added all of his connections. He has a Substack. UkraineFreedomProject.org is the link there. He's got a LinkedIn, a Facebook, all sorts of stuff. There's a tremendous amount of information out there, and they do a good job of pushing that out. So, not a topic that we are brilliant strategists about, Stephen. So, mostly, it's all you. Mark said you know everything, so I'm like, okay, Mark said he knows everything. I'm calling the guy.
Well, that's good to hear. I appreciate the vote of confidence.
Sure.
You know, as I just wanted to let you know that I heard you were sick, Aaron, and so in solidarity, I developed a cough.
Yes.
So I will also be muting when I go into coughing spasms.
Nice.
So,
nice. Are you wheezing? You know, is it the kind that makes you, you know, double over? Like, are we all in the same boat? Or how do we? They say there's three things out there, right? The flu, RSV, and COVID, of course. Which who the hell knows? I mostly just have Christmas asthma that turns into this whole big thing. But I think we got it pretty well covered. Then if all three of us are sick, that's awesome.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know what I have, but I do know that it's a good thing we're on radio because the color of what is coming up out of my lungs is not something anybody wants to see.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's an interesting and very connected fact there. We've also noticed that the, you know, it's kind of like a kitty experiment. You know, you're like, oh, wow, that's exciting.
Exactly.
So if you're sick, do you have to, you got to kind of keep going like everybody else, huh?
Yeah, you know, taking unscheduled nap, let's say. You know, it's just like, okay, I got a nap now, you know, and then most I can get on with my day. So it's all good. We're all good. Could be a lot worse. I could be in a Russian POW camp. I could be, on the front in Donetsk Oblast. So,
that's right.
Yeah, and on a lesser note, we could be the person who probably gave all of this to us, Bill Sister, who is
nice.
in a hospital in a quarantine ward for 10 days in Sacramento.
Oh, no.
Yeah, sucks to be her. a lot.
Brutal. Good wishes of New Year's health to all of us then. How's
exactly.
That
absolutely.
All right. So what, I mean, there's just a lot of information out there about Ukraine. A lot of it I know is not accurate. A lot of it is hype. A lot of it is, you know, there's just a lot. So I was really hoping, you know, this would be one of those things where people could walk away and feel like, okay, I've heard from someone who actually knows what they're talking about, gave me some facts, and I feel like I can make sense of things a little bit.
Yeah, well, I hope I fulfill your expectations. You know, I went to Ukraine on day 5 of the war because I have a bunch of Ukrainian friends. I lived there for a year in 2018 and 2019, and my friends are saying things like, "Hey, they're bombing Kyiv. I don't know what to do." And I had spent nearly 2 years as a civilian in Iraq. At the beginning of that war, I got there about 3 months after Saddam's statue fell. You spend 2 years in Baghdad, you kind of know your way around a war zone. So my friends needed help, and so I hopped on a plane and got there as quickly as I could. And I spent about 3 weeks trying to get my friends out of hot spots like Kyiv and Kharkiv, because Kyiv was surrounded on three sides at that time. Yeah, by the Russians, and like everyone else in the world, I thought that the Russians were just going to roll through Ukraine in 3 weeks, and everybody's going to be lucky to get out. Fortunately, everyone else in the world was wrong, and the Ukrainians were right, and they fought their way out of this thing. And I think what a lot of Americans don't realize is that, again, you know, at the beginning of the war, almost 2 years ago now, I guess 22 months, Kyiv, the capital city, was surrounded on three sides by Russians. And I was there, and I was trying to help people and trying to get medicine to the front and that sort of thing. And it was grim. And, you know, the Ukrainians, what most people don't realize is the Ukrainians have pushed the Russians back about 800 miles. They've taken back all of their country except for about 17%. And so, you know, when I first got to Kyiv in 2022, I could have walked from my apartment to the front.
Yeah.
And
wow.
It would have been a long walk. It would have been 2 hours probably. But I could have walked to the front pretty easily. And now I live in Kyiv. And, and when my friends come to visit me, I always say, "What do you see here? Tell me what you see in Kyiv that gives you the sense there's a war going on." And, you know, and it's hard to tell, right? It's like, couldn't get lactose-free milk in my cappuccino today. And, so Kyiv is a highly functioning city. And that's because the investment that the U.S. taxpayers made in Ukraine has been incredibly effective. So that's kind of a little bit about, you know, what I've been doing and what I'm seeing.
Wow.
So I guess one of the questions I have, Stephen, is here you have Russia, who was touted as this world superpower that was going to march into Ukraine and just romp over the top of them. And from what I'm hearing, they're getting it handed to them. What is that just bad leadership on the Russians' part, or is that just exceptional tenacity on the part of the Ukrainians?
Well, it's both. And, you know, Vladimir Putin, when he went into Ukraine, thought that they would welcome him as a liberator because he's a very isolated, dictatorial, authoritarian figure who is surrounded by yes men who say, oh, yes, you know, Mr. Putin, they'll welcome you. Yes, they'll be happy to see you. And so they sent the tanks in, and they sent the soldiers in with, like, you know, 2 days worth of food, you know, figured that they'd be dining in Kyiv restaurants on the third day, and it didn't happen that way. And the Ukrainians are the bravest, most resourceful people in the world. It's just amazing. It's just something I'm really proud to be a part of, is that, you know, you've got everyone that is fighting. There's you know, hundreds of thousands, I think maybe 1.5 million Ukrainians who are fighting right now or are in the army. And those people were all, on, you know, the war started on February 24th. On February 23rd, those people were, and just to name a few of the people I work with, lawyers, physical trainers, yoga teachers, auto body repairmen, software engineers. None of the people fighting right now were soldiers on February 23rd. And they have, and I'll just give you one anecdote to give a sense of how resourceful the Ukrainians are. I got a bunch of friends in the military, and one of them told me that the Dutch sent them 24 Stryker armored vehicles and said, you can use these as spare parts, and because we can't get them to run. They got 19 of those things to run.
Wow.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So they are really, you know, when people ask me, is our money going to a good thing? I say yes, because A, they're a very good steward of what we send over there. And two, how do you know, right? Well, I know because they pushed the Russians 800 miles back. They've taken all but 17% of their territory. So, you know, you can't be, you know, selling off weapons and selling off security aid and be that effective, because they just can't, because the Russian army, the Russian military, while they're, you know, incompetent and while they're amazingly corrupt, there's just a lot of them. There's a lot of Russian soldiers, so they don't have the capacity to be corrupt, you know, and be effective, and they've been effective. So by some measures, the intelligence services of the UK and the US estimate that 60 to 70% of Putin's warfighting capability has been eliminated by the Ukrainians.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, okay, so as this goes on, there's always this, you know, the pendulum that swings, right? Help everybody, let's get in, and then, well, it's costing a lot of money and might not be doing anything, and I mean, I think that's a huge hurdle at this point for all of it.
Yeah, I completely agree.
From the outside looking in, anyway.
Yeah. Well, you know, I you know, as you mentioned, I'm a public opinion researcher, so I like the polls, I look at data quite a lot. And and if you look at any metric, the Ukrainians have been majority of the war.
Wait, say that again. The Ukrainians have the what?
Sorry, that was a coughing.
Don't want to assume.
But the Ukrainians. So, you know, so again, let me. You know, so the Ukrainians have taken out something on the order of 5,000 Russian tanks. The Ukrainians have you know, at the beginning of the at the end of the first year of the war, they had killed 150,000 killed or neutralized 150,000 Russian soldiers. For perspective, those of us that are old enough to remember the Soviet war in Afghanistan, there was 15,000 soldiers killed over 10 years. So in the first year of the Ukraine war, there's 150,000 Russian soldiers killed, you know, again, in 1 year. So,
So
it's been a bloody war. The Ukrainians have been incredibly effective. But, you know, if you look at the polling, the only in America at the height of, you know, so at the height of the Ukrainian victories, when they're taking back massive swaths of land, only about a third of Americans thought Ukraine was winning. And you know, why is that? I think in part it's due to the news coverage, which is the news does not cover Ukrainian victories. They only cover, you know, today something blew up in Ukraine. Today something blew up in Ukraine, you know, and that's what Americans think. And so I live in Kyiv, and I come here, I talk to groups of people in the United States, and they say things like, can you get food in Kyiv? Yeah, Kyiv is a very highly functioning city, thanks to U.S. taxpayer dollars that are keeping it safe, that allowed the Ukrainians to push out the Russians. So it's there's a really a big difference between what most Americans think and what I see every day when I'm in Ukraine.
Wow. Well, it is kind of interesting that people do have a you know, you get a really skewed view because you do only see what's on the news. Most people have obviously never been there. And you think, well, the only stuff they show you is the, you know, CNN guy or whoever with the helmet on. I have to take a really, really quick break so we can all cough and blow our nose. It's supposed to be a free enterprise moment here. We're going to have a free enterprise moment where we cough and blow our nose. And then we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Our guest is Stephen Moore, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. What makes you think of things like that? Oh my gosh! Well, whoever knew the Bee Gees would have a fitting song for the war in Ukraine, huh?
Yeah,
seems unlikely. So Stephen, what about
the Oklahoma?
What's that?
I said the Bee Gees were the first concert I ever saw in 1978 in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Oh, I think I saw Steve Miller right around that time.
There you go.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find something from him. I don't know if he does war, but I'm sure everybody does.
I don't think the Bee Gees knew they did war.
All the songs we heard in the 70s all of a sudden have, like, boomeranged back and seem fitting. Why were you in Ukraine? You were in Ukraine before the war. Before the war?
I was. I was.
Well, not to get too, you know, nosy, but, like, did you like it there? What were you doing there? How was it?
You know, so it is a great place. Ukraine is a great place. And, you know, I was there. I was doing public opinion research at the time for one of the largest news organizations in Ukraine. And I lived in Kyiv, and it's a beautiful historic city. It has great restaurants, and there's a real entrepreneurial vibe among the Ukrainians, and they see themselves as being like Americans. They're, you know, the most freedom-loving people that, you know, and that's, listen, they are all fighting and dying because they don't want to live under the yoke of the Russians. You know, they just want their freedom. That's it. And because in the areas occupied by the Russians, in that 17% of the country that is not yet reclaimed by the Ukrainians, the worst things in the world are happening. They are using rape as a weapon of war. They'll rape children. The Russians will rape old ladies. They are persecuting Protestants for their faith. They're torturing and murdering Protestants for their faith. Because, and this is something that I think your listeners need to understand, is that the Russian Orthodox Church is not a church as you and I would expect it to be, right? It is a it is actually a working arm of the Kremlin. The patriarch of the Russian Orthodox Church, a guy named Kirill, Patriarch Kirill said, if you die fighting in Ukraine, all your sins will be washed away. And if your listeners, and I encourage them to do so, Google Russian Orthodox priest blessing tanks, you'll get 100 pictures of guys in robes with the sprinkling holy water on tanks. So the Russian Orthodox Church is not preaching a message of peace. They're preaching, but they're actively aiding the Russian army. And so now, with that as a context, when the Russians go into an area of Ukraine where there's Protestants, and there's about 1.5 million Protestants in Ukraine, they'll say, "Oh, you're a Baptist, you're a Presbyterian, you must be an agent of the American government, like our guys are an agent of our government." And so they will treat them as spies, and they will arrest them, and they will torture them. And there's a city called Melitopol, which is under occupation, and they have, you know, one pastor there says they simply come in and eliminated every Protestant church in Melitopol.
Wow. Yeah, that is kind of a different focus.
Yeah.
So do the Ukrainian people recognize the Russian Orthodox Church as being an arm of the Russian government?
Yeah. So there's people in the media who let's just say they get more views on Twitter than I do, who will tell you that Zelensky is, you know, President Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, is persecuting Christians in Ukraine, which is completely inaccurate, because the Russian Orthodox Church has a branch in Ukraine. It's called the Ukrainian Orthodox Church Moscow Patriarch, because they report to the Patriarch of Moscow, just like, you know, just like if you were Roman Catholic and reported to the Pope. So this church used to be the biggest in Ukraine, but because the Russians kept being increasingly aggressive towards Ukrainians, and the clergy of this Russian Orthodox Church in Ukraine report to the Kremlin, you know, report to the Moscow Patriarch, everybody abandoned them. So at one point, they were probably 70% of the country, and this would be 20 or 30 years ago. Now polls show they're 3-4% of the country. But the clergy, they still have a lot of clergy there, and the clergy of this Russian Orthodox Church in Ukraine is actively aiding the Russian army. And I'll just give you one example.
From inside Ukraine.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
So they're acting as provocateurs, as espionage agents. And I'll just give you one particularly egregious example. There's a place in... there's a place in Ukraine outside of Kyiv called Bucha, and Bucha is an affluent suburb of Kyiv, and it was occupied by the Russians for about 6 weeks. And when the Russians rolled into Bucha, there was a priest of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, which is a branch of the Russian Orthodox Church in Ukraine. The priest says to the soldiers, "Hey, great to see you guys. Come with me. I'll take you to the homes of people who are most likely to oppose you." And so now there's a mass grave in Bucha. Bucha's been liberated. And there's a mass grave there of more than 500 people who have their hands tied behind their back, signs of torture on their body, who've been executed by the Russians. Many of them were put there by this Russian Orthodox priest from the Ukrainian Orthodox Church Moscow Patriarch.
Oh, my gosh.
So when you hear folks like Tucker Carlson say that Zelensky's persecuting Christians, this is the type of behavior that Tucker Carlson is defending. And the really painful part of that is that because Tucker's talking about this and Tucker gets 10 million views on Twitter every time he gets on, nobody is talking about the Protestants that are being tortured and murdered by, you know, again, Baptists, Presbyterians, Evangelicals, Pentecostals that are, you know, they're in the occupied territories that are now being tortured and murdered and hunted by the Russian soldiers in those areas.
Mm. Wow. Well, you do hear that.
Well, you hear Ramaswamy or whatever his name is. You hear him bashing Zelensky a lot about religion and how he's persecuted all the Christians. And is that just from a lack of understanding of the situation?
There's narratives that are put out there. No, he is not lacking understanding. Yeah, Ramaswamy, you know, in my view, is rather obnoxious, but he's not a foolish man. He's not stupid, and he knows. You know, I mean, look, if you Google this for like just, you know, 2 or 3 minutes and start Googling stuff, it'll come up what the real story is. And in fact, any of your listeners, can Google my name, Stephen Moore, and Google, and then you know, Russian Orthodox Church, and you'll see articles that I've written that are very well sourced, very well documented. You can go to there's a website, RussiaTorturesChristians.org. That's RussiaTorturesChristians.org, and you get the whole story. And you know, and it's not hard to figure out. But what Ramaswamy is willing to do is, and others like him, is to perpetuate this false narrative to increase his own popularity, because it's out there, and you know, he thinks by beating up on Zelensky, he will get more popular. And the good news about that is that he's not.
No, it's not
he's going down to the polls.
Yeah. No, his poll numbers are shaky at best at this point.
Well, so. And what's the, you know, there's always an end game. So if you're doing polling and you're looking at, you know, big picture and the chess pieces moving around the table, what's fade in and out of that 30,000 foot view? I mean, what's the, there's always propaganda. I mean, I don't mean to sound silly. I mean, for God's sake, I'm a grown woman, right? So there's always propaganda. It isn't like, well, gosh, why doesn't everyone just tell the truth?
Yeah,
I get that. That's not a thing. But what's the end game on this whole thing?
When you say whole thing, like on...
Like why starve the funding? Why make it look like there are things going on that are not going on? That sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, here's the... In terms of the Tucker Carlson's of the world, you know, so Russia... So Tucker Carlson has said, why aren't we supporting Russia? I am. And so, you know, Tucker has said that he is supporting Russia, and which is disappointing because... I knew him back in the day, you know, when the Daily Caller first came out. I worked with him to socialize the Daily Caller among Capitol Hill chiefs. And, you know, he was a good guy back then. But he's chosen this path of supporting Russia. I have very good friends who are also in Russia because they're Ukrainian. And you know, they did a search on Tucker Carlson on Russian media. And, you know, there's Russian propagandists. They have their own shows, like, you know, Rachel Maddow and Tucker Carlson. They've got their own versions of those. And these Kremlin propagandists call Tucker Carlson their favorite. And what they will say, you know, our favorite newscaster in America, Tucker Carlson. And what they'll do is they will say something on Tuesday. This is back when Tucker had a show. That they would say something on Tuesday. Tucker would repeat it on Wednesday. And on Thursday, they would take the clip from Tucker's show and say, see, at least one American has it right. So why is Tucker Carlson forwarding Putin's propaganda? You know, difficult to say. The guy's worth $400 million. Does he need more money? I don't know.
See, and the thing that's hard about that is that... this has been going on for a while now. You know, it's like Putin's talking points and all that. And so, like, when I hear that, my first thought is to dismiss that. I'm like, yeah, sure, okay, right.
Yeah.
But nobody's ever right all the time. Nobody's ever wrong all the time. It just doesn't. So Zelensky, like, to kind of move into his thing, you know, his orbit there. He kind of came off as the kind of hapless leader, I guess, you know, thrust into the spotlight. And then kind of, he was all that in a sack of chips, and you better do what I say or else. And now that's sort of changed a little bit. That there's been quite a, he's traversed quite a, quite an expanse on that, on his whole thing.
Yeah, well, you know, again, looking at the public opinion, you know, in at the beginning of the war in March of 2022, Republican voters had the highest, of all the subgroups, of all the, you know, Republican voters, Democrat voters, everyone else, Republican voters had the highest opinion of Zelensky. And now that's dropped where they're the group that has the lowest opinion of President Zelensky. So, you know, and here's what I see. I see that... and I think most of that is like, you know, there's this thing recently that came out that Zelensky's bought two yachts. And when you do a deeper dive on that, and they've got pictures of the yachts, you figure out which yachts they are, you know, the yachts haven't been sold in years, right? And so, and that story comes from an American living in Russia who's got his own website, you know, and it was just made up, but it gets into the conservative media ecosphere. So that's the disappointing part, is that, you know, if you would have talked to me 2 years ago and talked to me about, you know, Putin's talking points or Russian propaganda, uh-huh. I'd be exactly where you are. I'd be like, oh, yeah, okay, whatever, you know.
And, well, because they say it about us, right? Anything the left doesn't agree with, like, you're a Putin apologist. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, yeah.
Stop yourselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly the left is, you know, yeah, and here's for folks that, you know, so I'm talking about how Russian propaganda seeps into the conservative ecosphere, but you know, but here's let's talk about the left. You know, I have friends in Ukraine, and I'll tell you just a quick story about my friend Yuri Chumak. Yuri is a Supreme Court justice in Ukraine, and he is now there's 160 Supreme Court justices. But Yuri is one of them. And on the first days of the war, Yuri organized about 35 of his colleagues, and they in turn organized several hundred bureaucrats at the Ministry of Finance, Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and everything else. And they grabbed rifles and ran towards the Russians. And so this is my friend Yuri and his friends. And now... Yuri is on top of an apartment building in Kyiv, and they have World War II era machine guns, and they're shooting down Iranian drones. So,
he's with us. I think the signal is just bad.
Maybe some coughing. We lost you after Iranian drones.
Maybe we can.
It's kind of like a cliffhanger.
Hello, hello.
Kind of a cliffhanger. Iranian drones. Woo!
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello.
Gotcha.
Yeah, you're back.
I'm back?
Yeah, you're okay. Back right after.
The Iranian drones took you out.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, this happens while we're in Kyiv. It would be a true mystery. So Yuri shoots down drones with, Iranian drones with World War II era machine guns. And Yuri is a very smart man. He asked me one day, he said, Stephen, you know, I understand Trump's strategy. He says, you know, take away our weapons, we can't fight, and you know, we'll have to negotiate with the Russians. He's like, I don't like it, but I understand it. And he says, and I understand the strategy of giving us the weapons we need to win. He's like, I don't understand what the Biden administration is doing, is that, you know, they are dripping weapons out along you know, and they're not, and they're, you know, very slowly getting weapons over. And he says, you know, they promised tanks in January, and they got here in October. He says, and F-16s in February were a bad idea. In May, they're a good idea, and they're still not in Ukraine. He's like, you know, we view ourselves as partners with the United States. We are helping you take out one of your longtime adversary, Russia. And, you know, you provide the weapons, and we provide the lives of our very best people. And when your contribution comes slowly, our contribution goes up. And, you know, I didn't have a good answer to that because it's true. The Biden administration has just slow-walked weapons over there. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that this, you know, the much-talked-about summer offensive by the Ukrainians wasn't effective, is because, you know, the Biden administration didn't give them the weapons they need. So, you know, so there's a it's disappointing to see this. And you know,
it hamstrings them. It's not like they have all the time in the world, and that everybody's you know, this isn't some collegiate experiment.
Yeah, put it on hold until the weapons show.
Yeah,
up.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, ruh-roh. Yeah. We'll get right back to you. You know.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got to take a really quick break, and then let's stick with that, because I do think that is something that I like the idea that you do all of this polling and you look at it from that standpoint, because honestly, I think it's gotten so muddy for people that either people have disengaged or kind of hardened themselves against it at this point, and maybe not with a huge amount of information behind that. So,
yeah.
Our guest is Stephen Moore with Ukraine Freedom Project. We appreciate him coming on. You're listening to us at wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back.
Freedom, what did you hope to learn about here? If I was someone else, would this all fall apart? Strange, where were you when we started this game? I wish the real world would just stop hassling me. Hold your family name. You've got to stand for something, or you'll fall for anything.
Good old Aaron Tippin. Okay, so Stephen, I also just wanted to point out to people, I added to the page the link you told us, RussiaTorturesChristians.org, and you know, in the very first link. Very first sentence, actually. Supporters of Russia have pushed this narrative to distract from the widespread torture and persecution of Ukrainian Protestants by Russians that we are highlighting on this website. And it kind of goes from there. So that's a terrific resource for people who have heard that narrative and would kind of like to peel that apart and get some facts. Very helpful. Uh-oh. Did we lose him? Is he trapped in the cone of silence?
There we go. I should take it off mute before I try to speak. So, thanks for pointing that out. We've got two groups of folks out in Ukraine that are getting testimonies from Ukrainian Christians who have been persecuted, tortured, or have seen the murder of other Protestant leaders in Ukraine by the Russians.
Yeah, because the header on the first FAQ is, hasn't President Zelensky banned churches in Ukraine? Because we all heard that.
Well, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
All is a big word, but, you know, okay, a lot of us heard that. That was a very popular narrative.
And it is, there's a, you know, the only truth in that is that there are clergy of the Russian Orthodox Church in Ukraine being arrested. And so, you know, when you hear that, that is true. But they're being arrested because they are directing artillery, because they are promoting Russian propaganda, because they're, again, like the priest in Bucha, they're taking Russian soldiers to the homes of people who would oppose them. And, you know, and this story is pretty common in Ukraine. Like, for instance, one of my colleagues, Anna Shvetsova, is from a small city about 30 miles from the Russian border in the east of Ukraine. And we visited her family, and in just about a five-mile drive from where her family lives, there's a monastery. And, you know, and during the war, what we found out was that, you know, so they were occupied for several weeks during the beginning of the war. And when they the Russian, or let's start with the Ukrainian military, liberated this area. They went to this monastery and found that it had been hiding Russian soldiers, that there was a weapons depot there. And so, again, when you hear this narrative that Zelensky's persecuting Christians, he is not persecuting for their faith. He is persecuting, you know, he is arresting them because they're committing crimes that get Ukrainians killed. And so that is the unfortunate truth. And, you know, and again, going back to the public opinion, 85% of Ukrainians want Zelensky to do something about this because, again, the behavior of these clergy is so egregious that Ukrainians want Zelensky to do something about it. 85% of them. 66% of Ukrainians want Zelensky to ban the Russian Orthodox Church in Ukraine completely. And so, and Ramaswamy knows this because it's easily Googleable. Tucker Carlson knows this because it's easily Googleable. And, you know, Tucker's a smart man. He has a big staff. You know, you could, again, 85% of Ukrainians want something done about the Russian Orthodox Church in Ukraine. So Tucker Carlson could randomly dial any number in Ukraine, and you know, and there's an 85% chance he would get someone to tell him the real story, right? So he is willfully spreading this this narrative that is covering up the fact that Russians are torturing and murdering Protestants in Ukraine.
And, you know, of course, none of us ever know what somebody else's motivation really is. I mean, we can all speculate because we're smart. But what's your best guess? Like, what's the end game for that? What's the point?
Yeah, why? Yeah, good question.
Look at that. I got a good question out of myself today.
Yeah. Viktor Orban is the leader of Hungary, Prime Minister of Hungary, and he is very pro-Russian, and Tucker Carlson's father is or was the lobbyist for Hungary. It's not clear. I don't think he still is, but he certainly was at one time. And so there's this Hungary connection, and that's the only thing I can figure out. I really don't know.
Because he did a whole big thing on him, right?
Yeah. So and I don't know if he's ever said that, you know, about his personal connection to Hungary, documented. So you'd think as a journalist, he would, say, hey, listen, I've got to, up front, I got to say my father was previously the lobbyist for Hungary. But I have not
was he
say that he was. Yeah.
Oh.
This is again something that if you Google Dick Carlson lobbyist Hungary, it will come up.
Well, who knew?
Yeah. Again, you know, I wish you would know if I got 10 million views on Twitter every time I got on, you would know. But I'm. You know, and just to give your listeners a sense, you know, I got no stake in this other than I think this is the right thing to do. I was a volunteer for the first 18 months of this. I started my own NGO. We've gotten about $1.2 million worth of aid to the front. Prior to doing this, I was an executive in an AI firm, and I was getting paid a lot more than I am now. So, just to give a sense of, you know, why should you listen to Stephen Moore? Well, Stephen Moore's doing this because he thinks it's the right thing to do, and he's, not making money off of anything. So, whereas Tucker Carlson, is a pretty highly paid TV personality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot to be said for that. And the hard part is once something like this, I mean, human nature's it's predictable and faulty all at the same time, but once you get people in kind of involved in this, right, and they start following it, and then they find out that it's confusing, maybe they're being lied to a little bit, being played a bit. You hear, you hear it all the time, right? Ukraine's the most corrupt country out there.
Yeah.
And that resonates in people's ears. So then it goes longer and longer. Got people pouring over the border. You have all these things going on, and it's really easy to say, hey, in this place far away that we don't understand, that we think there's probably something bad happening, that they can't win, let's stop giving them money.
Yeah.
I mean, that seems to be like the slippery slope, if you will.
Oh, completely agree. Yeah, completely agree. Yeah, so here's, and I've done a deep dive into corruption in Ukraine, and here's what I've seen, is that my Ukrainian friends tell me we steal from ourselves. And so, and let me put it to you this way. There's kind of four big pots of money that are available for corruption. One is the weapons that Americans send over there. Two is the money that this is Americans and Europeans, because what's also not getting out is the Europeans are now exceeding America's donations to Ukraine, because, you know, Europeans recognize that if Ukraine falls, then Poland, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, Finland, Norway, Romania, any of these number of these countries could be next. So, that's what Vladimir Putin says. But let me go back to the corruption. And so there's the stuff that people send over, stuff that countries send over. There's the money that countries send over. There's Ukrainian taxpayer money. And then there's a lot of crowdsourcing. And what people don't realize that, you know, I am old enough to remember when the liberals used to say, let's fully fund the Department of Education and hold a bake sale to buy a B-1 bomber. I don't know. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Well, and that is what's happening in Ukraine, is that they are crowdsourcing money for things like body armor, helmets, Starlinks and generators and this sort of thing, for trucks, because, you know, despite the fact that it seems like we're spending a lot of money over there, for the size of this war, you know, we're sending them big weapons like howitzers, armored vehicles, Bradleys, and that sort of thing. So some of the smaller stuff doesn't get over there in the amount that's needed by Ukrainians. So it's crowdsourced.
Okay.
So again, so you look at weapons. So we're sending big weapons over there. You know, you haven't heard of these weapons popping up in Syria or Africa or anything else.
Sure.
And because it's not happening. And what I learned from a friend of mine who was involved in the logistics chain, he was very high up in the military, in getting the weapons from Poland into the front. He's like, look, the stuff lands in Poland. It's logged into NATO software. It's the same NATO software that every NATO country uses. I have a password to it. And the three guys that are NATO advisors next to me have a password to it. And, you know, this stuff is scanned like a FedEx package. And, so it's scanned at every point. Then it gets to the front. He's like, I don't see any way that you could get a weapon out of that chain. He says, now, once it gets there, you could claim that your Bradley fighting vehicle was blown up, and then whenever it was not. And he says, but what's happened is that the police from the occupied areas are now military police, because if you're a police officer in a place that's some part of that 17% that's still occupied, you're looking for something else to do. So these guys are investigating every weapon that disappears, because, you know,
that makes sense.
Yeah. And so he's like, yeah. And so he's like, that would be really hard. And then, you know, if you've got, let's say, an
Stephen, hold that thought. Hold that thought, because we've got to take a break for the news, and then we're going to come back. So we got 5 minutes to refill coffee and do all that.
Okay.
Our guest is Stephen Moore. We'll be back with him. We're talking about the Ukraine Freedom Project. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Let me know you're here, because my TV set just keeps it on.
Second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundy. And our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. They're our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. You can get anything you want when it comes to John Deere. Just give them a call. And they've got tractors, mowers, zero turns, implements, parts service. They do it all up there. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard. Or give them a call at 530-226-9226. I'd love to hear from you. And now's a good time to get in there and get your winter service done before you really got to have it. So give them a call, or you can catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
And it costs extra if you fix it yourself.
Yes, it does. It costs extra if you tell them how to fix it, too.
I got you that great sign. We have to bring the great sign.
Yeah.
I forgot.
Yeah.
Okay, so and let's see. Free advertisement of the week goes to my friends at Shasta Pizza. I haven't seen them in several weeks, but Shasta Pizza over on Victor, if you live here in town, you should go have them make you a pizza. They're the best, and they're the nicest. I never call them. I go in. I can't bear to be one of those people who's making their phone ring all the time. I got to go in and order. Sad. And that might be happening later today. I just spoiler alert. I might be going by later today. Oh my goodness! So our guest this hour is the same as our guest last hour. Actually, if you missed the first hour, you better tune back in. So you know, not to put too fine a point on it, but topics like this are things that we like to cover because you just can't do it in a minute and a half. Nobody learns anything in a minute and a half particularly. And especially on this whole Ukraine thing, because it's kind of, I mean, you know, not to beat the war analogies in the head, but it's kind of a minefield.
Well, everybody has an opinion on it, and that's what it is, it's opinion. And so few people have facts on what's really happening over
but,
there.
But, like we talked about last hour, you know, you've got the commentators and you've got conservative commentators. It isn't just a... Like, Stephen, on this as a... it's a terrible question, but I'm asking it anyway. On like a left-right issue, like, is there even such a thing, or is this just like a big marble rye?
Oh, that's a terrible question.
Shut up, Bill. I wasn't asking you. I was counting on Stephen being too nice to call me on it.
I guess it's, you know, I look at it this way. So, you know, freedom is one of my most important personal values. And, you know, after 2001, I spent 3.5 years in Muslim countries as a civilian trying to help them figure out how to use, you know, words to solve their problems other than guns and bombs. And you can argue about how effective that was, but
I
give it a shot, right? And so now, yeah, I have the Arabic word for freedom tattooed on my leg. And so...
what does it say? So good luck? Is it know, like the equivalent of good luck?
Well, they told me it was the Arabic word for freedom, but, you know, I don't speak Arabic, so it could be anything. But for me... This is a freedom value. These people in Ukraine have been trying to shake off the yoke of Russia since, you know, for three decades since they gained their independence. And, you know, they're finally doing it, and it's costing them lives. And it's a terrible thing. But they're not showing any cracks in their resolve. You know, my friends in Kyiv are getting hit by missiles most nights, and you know, I asked them, "You guys doing okay? You know, is everybody still? You know, how does it affect morale?" And they're like, "You know, it just really makes us angry, and so we are all united in our resolve because we're angry that this is happening, and so Ukrainians have no choice but to fight. And why should the Americans care?" And that's a good question. You know, we've got a lot of people coming to our southern border. I like the Mike Gallagher piece that was at the top of the hour. And yeah, the southern border is super important. And, you know, and 3/4 of Americans want something done about increased border security, including 54% of Democrats. So this should be an easy thing for Biden to do, increase border security. Why it's not, I don't know. But what's also happening is that we can't, you know, if America pulls back from the world does not get to be a better place. And most Americans are living under the illusion that we can choose whether or not to participate in wars in Europe and the Middle East.
And oh, I'd say that's totally true. People do think that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. As we saw in World War II, you know, the oceans were not big enough to keep us from getting involved in those wars. And those oceans are metaphorically much smaller now because the world's much more interconnected. And, you know, we can either send weapons to our allies in Ukraine and Israel who are willing to fight and die for their freedom. You know, we can send them weapons, you know, now, which is relatively inexpensive, or we can send troops in 2, 3, 5 years, and which is going to be expensive in so many ways, you know? So
pay now, pay later, right?
Yeah.
Kind of same sort of idea.
Yeah. And if you're a fiscal conservative, as I am, here's, you know, think about it in this perspective, is that since 2000, I did the math on this, when Putin took power in 2000, we have spent $14 trillion in the U.S. Department of Defense. So in that 23 years, we spent $14 trillion on our national defense. Now, what percentage of that was to deter Russia? I don't know, because they don't break it down that way. But let's say it's 20%. So that's $2.8 trillion that we've spent to deter Russia in the last 20 years. And now compare that to the $42 billion in weapons that we've sent to Ukraine. And again, as I mentioned in the last hour, the Ukrainians have pushed back the Russians 800 miles. They've taken back all but 17% of their territory. And intelligence estimates say that the Ukrainians have degraded Putin's warfighting capability by 60 to 70%. So this $42 billion is by far the most effective money that we have spent to deter Russia since the Cold War, at least. You know, since the Reagan era. So, you know, it is well-spent money. It is effective in deterring Russia. None of our children are dying. So I just would hate to see this. If we stop sending weapons to Ukraine, you know, the international coalition that is supporting Ukraine will unravel because it takes American leadership. The Russians will at some point roll through Ukraine, and they'll be on the doorstep of a NATO country like Poland, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia. And Putin has said Poland or the Baltic countries are next. And so it's going to get uglier.
Yeah. In the beginning, of, you know, when they first went into Ukraine, the United States was obviously one of the biggest contributors to aid, and the EU is kind of standing off watching. Have they really stepped up much and participated in their own defense now, or do they see the danger down the road?
Yeah, there's an organization called the Kiel Institute, K-I-E-L, in Germany, and they track all the all the aid that's been sent to Ukraine. And sometime last summer, the Europeans exceeded the Americans as the largest donor to Europe. Yeah, and if you look at
we're not hearing.
You know, you know, if you know how to use Google, it should take you 3 or 4 minutes. Here's the other thing to think about is that a lot of people think that, I've heard this on Capitol Hill, I've heard this from members of Congress, that Putin will never invade a NATO country. Well, that's not what the NATO countries who are on his list say, right? You've got, Finland is joining NATO, Sweden is joining NATO, that weren't NATO members before. You've got Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia, and Poland, who on a per GDP basis have, like, given 5 to 6 times more than the Americans have. So if you are one of those NATO countries that's right next to Russia or Ukraine, you know, and you see the Russians, the Russian bear coming up to your doorstep, you're doing everything you can to help Ukraine.
Sure.
Yeah, because you need them rolling onto your porch like you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody's really prepared for that. So we have a we have somebody here who has family comes from Ukraine, and she had asked me in the last hour, and I fumbled the ball and didn't ask you, but there's some big brouhaha trend. I think it's a, you know, obviously has hit social media that the and I don't know that. I don't know how to pronounce the name, but Grunkevic or Grunkevich stole like $3 million from the army that was supposed to be for aid and that sort of thing. And so people are kind of up in arms about that. Is that pretty common, like things like that, to have them coming, you know, have that kind of thing come out?
I'm aware of three cases where I'm aware of two cases before this one. I wasn't aware of this one, so I'll look it up. There is, you know, I'm not saying there's not corruption in Ukraine, but
there's corruption everywhere. You know, so we would all be lying if we said there wasn't any somewhere else, right?
Yeah, I mean, think about it this way. You know, no matter what side of the aisle you are on in America. You think that someone on the other side of the aisle is, you know, completely corrupt and needs to go to prison, but is not, right? And so, and
if you were honest, so you know that it's kind of everywhere. I mean, it's not everyone, but to say that it's not possible, that's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And here's what I would say is that there was a Ukrainian Supreme Court justice that was corrupt, and he is now in jail, and nobody in Ukraine, you know, prior to the war, no one thought that would ever happen. But, you know, I think it's the Chief Justice of the Ukrainian Supreme Court is in jail because of corruption. There was a scandal over $33 million worth of winter jackets that was shipped to Ukraine. This is some months ago. And that they were, the price was inflated. And so Zelensky fired the defense minister and six of his deputies. So there's a new defense minister now because of this $3 million corruption issue. And so, you know, is there corruption? Yeah. But has anyone at the Pentagon ever been fired for the $400 toilet seat or the $600 hammer?
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Took it to be started on the VA.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So what's happened in Ukraine is that they are firing people. People are getting fired for these things.
Do you think, just based on what you've been watching since you were there, I mean, 5 days in, you've been watching it longer than the average person, do you think, just in your, you know, I mean, if it was your war to orchestrate, do you think Zelensky has been effective as a communicator? Not necessarily strategist and all around everything, but you think he was the right guy for the job at the time?
Oh yeah, I mean, I think you got to remember if you know, Biden said, "Hey, listen, we can get you out of Kyiv," and he said to Biden, "I need ammunition, not transportation." And so if he had said something else, then the Russians would be in control of Ukraine right now. And the resolve that he showed early on is the reason that the Ukrainians are still in this game. And so, yeah, I think he's a very good leader. Now, lately, as the war's drug on, I think he's been kind of off message on some stuff. excuse me. But, yeah, so, but I think that overall he's done a good job.
Yeah, I know that was that was the thing at the beginning. It's like, well, he's a comedian; he's not a world leader. I mean, who is this guy? And
have you ever seen Bedtime for Bonzo?
I've seen what?
Bedtime for Bonzo.
Oh yeah,
Bedtime for Bonzo. Yeah, it's a Ronald Reagan movie where he's like fathering a monkey named Bonzo. So, yeah, it's There's a long list.
It's not the first time somebody came from a different genre. How about that? But I know that at first it was kind of a novelty, and then became sort of a way to marginalize. I think. In some
exactly.
circles. We have to take a really quick break, but when we come back, I don't want to get into the last 2 seconds and talk about your project. We really need to doing a terrible job, all of us sick people, promoting your Ukraine Freedom Project. So when we come back, how about let's move into the shameless promotional part of the program.
I love shameless promotion.
We do too. We love shameless promotion. We're just off our game today. Sorry. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Probably part of your tattoo, Steven. The side of paradise, you know. So talk to us about Ukraine Freedom Project. We know how you started it, but like, how does it operate? What do you guys do? How do people help you? Why do they help you?
Yeah, good question. Thank you for that. And here's what we did. Basically, I got over there, and I started trying to help my Ukrainian friends out of hotspots like Kyiv and Kharkiv. And I started realizing that the international community, big organizations, were not doing what they needed to do at the beginning of the war. And so I'll give one quick example. A friend of a friend called me from a hospital, a small clinic outside of Kyiv, and he said, "Hey, we're taking war wounded. And we're not set up for that." You know, think of like a mini clinic anyone in America has. It's like, we're taking war wounded. We need medical supplies. Can you help us? And I was like, I don't want to go to the front. It's like, where's the Red Cross? And he's like, who? And so the International Committee of the Red Cross has really fallen short in Ukraine. So I got, I put about $6,000 of the medical supplies into a truck and drove them up to the front. And sure enough, there's nothing up there from any of the, UN or the International Committee of the Red Cross or any of those folks. And so I started the credit card bills mounted, I started raising money. And so we've raised about $600,000 for humanitarian aid, and we have gotten about $1.2 million worth of stuff to the front for that. And what we've gotten good at is we've gotten good at finding in-kind donations and getting them to Ukraine. As one example, in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where I'm from, we're working with Medical Networks International, which is a branch of the Rotary Clubs, and they're getting us containers full of pre-owned medical equipment that we're sending to Ukraine. And each container is about $1 million worth of goods, and it cost us $17,000 to get them over to Ukraine. So, with that sort of a multiplier effect, we can provide really good value for our donors.
Nice. And
yeah.
And so where does that fit in the, like, how do you make that make sense with what our government is doing? Because they're not doing the small stuff, right? They're doing the big stuff.
Yeah.
What's, give people kind of that landscape.
Yeah, so our contribution to this war is relatively small compared to, like, in Afghanistan, we're spending $330 million a day just in military aid. And we are spending, our contribution is something like $30 million a day. So it's like a tenth of what we're spending in Afghanistan. And again, I want to emphasize, for that amount of money, the Ukrainians have degraded Putin's war fighting capability by 60 to 70%. But what happens is that it, not all the aid that needs to, you know, again, they're holding crowdsourcing. They're crowdsourcing things like helmets, body armor for the soldiers. And now the big organizations have now gotten their act together and now are providing a lot of aid. But, you know, but what we're doing is it's not everything. And I have personally been to three different children's hospitals that have been shelled by the Russians. The Russians shell hospitals. And so sometimes, you know, you give aid to some place, you know, you give them the medical supplies they need, and the Russians blow it up. So so there's a constant need for this stuff over there. And Americans see $42 billion in weapons, and that's a big number. The next ask in Congress right now is $62 billion, I believe. And, you know, that's a big number. But when you look at the scope of this war, it's actually, and it compared to, you know, it's a fraction of what we spent in Afghanistan and Iraq. So, so what we're doing is we're getting the small stuff over. We're getting, I know places where this stuff is needed. You know, and despite the corruption in Ukraine and, you know, and despite the inefficiencies of large organizations, you know, that's kind of what I wanted to do is I wanted to go over there and, you know, I want to know exactly where this stuff's going. So I take this stuff to the front myself in many cases. You know, we work with Ukrainian organizations that I've vetted, that I've worked with, that I trust, that have local knowledge and know where this stuff should go. So that's what I offer. I'm kind of a good housekeeping seal of approval for aid to Ukraine.
Yeah, so that you can verify where it goes, so it isn't just, you know, you're
exactly.
You're just shooting stuff out into the stratosphere.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is, I think, where people become weary about all this. I mean, we've had so much money go out over so many things, and how much, you know, just random question, but how much do you think it hurt efforts like this, not knowing that they were coming, but that when, you know, you look back and you put everything in line, that withdrawal from Afghanistan and the mess that was, and leaving everything there, and the expense, the damage to our military and all
absolutely.
That, and people go, "What the hell are we doing that again?"
No, and that's the thing is, if you think as I do, if you think that the Biden administration's botched pullout of Afghanistan is the reason that that Hamas felt emboldened to go into Israel, that Putin felt emboldened to go into Ukraine. If you believe that, then wait till we pull out of Ukraine and leave them hanging. You know, what kind of message does that send to Xi Jinping? And, you know, if we had not sent weapons to Ukraine when we did, we right now would not be talking about the war in Ukraine, because Ukraine would be under Russia. We would be talking about the war in Taiwan, because you would have seen Xi Jinping say, "Putin got away with this? And, you know, I can do this." And now, think about this. If after 2 years, the international coalition supporting Ukraine dissolves because U.S. leadership goes away, then Xi Jinping is going to say, you know, all I got to do is wait 2 years. If I go into Taiwan and the world will forget about it, I can make that deal. So, and again, Americans are living under the illusion that we have a choice whether or not to participate in these wars. And, you know, if we embolden Putin and Xi Jinping and Iran and North Korea and all these other bad actors that are working together, I mean, you've heard the stories about North Korea sending missiles to Ukraine. You've heard the stories about Iran sending missiles to the Russians to send them to Ukraine. And so all these dark forces are working together. And we're in World War III, and the only people that are acting on that information is our adversaries. So we have the choice of either doing this now, where we send weapons, which is relatively inexpensive, or we can send troops, because, you know, if Putin starts taking over more of Europe, it will really disrupt trade. If China takes over Taiwan, it will really disrupt trade. You know, I think, you know, the vulnerabilities in our infrastructure with electricity and communication and satellites are well known. And, you know, I'm sure that China, you know, the next Pearl Harbor, the next 9/11 is not going to look like that. It's going to look like an attack on our infrastructure. So the world is not that big, and we can either push back against the bad guys now, you know, with weapons, or we're going to be in a really ugly situation in the next couple of years.
Yeah. And that's a bit of a hard, excuse me, kind of a hard corner for people to turn in some cases, because it's far away, seems small. It's kind of like, well, so Ukraine, a lot of people are kind of Russian anyway, so, you know, what the heck if they all just become Russians again? I'm of course being kind of glib about it, but I mean, that's kind of a, like, I mean, you know, Americans speak one language. You know, we don't get out much. We tend to be kind of dopey on the world stage there a little bit, and so you have you got all the guys telling you that, well, this is a ton of money, they can't win anyway. That's a biggie. Okay, so I got two things for you here in the end of this. One's quick here. I had somebody ask here. They wonder what you think about, what do the Ukrainians think about the people who left the country and didn't stand fight?
Yeah. Well, most of the people... So here's the way it went, is that if you are a woman or a child, you can leave the country. If you are a man with three kids or more, you can leave the country. And but otherwise, if you are a male between, you know, war fighting age, and I forget exactly what the specifics of that are, you can't leave the country. And there has not been a lot of those folks leave the country. There has been some, and as you might imagine, those people are not well thought of. So
yeah,
because there's a lot of people making a lot of sacrifices.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Yeah.
So if is there a scenario where they win, and does winning look like what we think winning looks like, or is winning just not getting crushed?
Yeah. Well, and again,
because now you're the boss of the whole thing, right? Because
yeah, sure.
You know, we've decided. Yeah, you're the boss of everything, so you know.
here's what could happen is that. The Ukrainians, again, have taken back most of their country. When I got there, Kyiv was surrounded on three sides, and everybody in the world thought that Ukraine was going to, you know, the Russians were going to roll through Ukraine in 3 weeks. And so when you ask me, can they win, they've been winning. And, I mean, here's some of the things that you don't hear about, is that the Russian Black Sea Fleet has lost 23 ships, and Ukraine doesn't even have a navy, and they have taken out the flagship of the Black Sea Fleet from the Russians. They've taken out the replacement for the flagship of the Black Sea Fleet, and they've taken out a submarine. Then they've bombed the headquarters of the Black Sea Fleet and killed many officers. So now the Russian Black Sea Fleet is hiding back in Russian territorial waters. They can't operate right now in Ukrainian territorial waters because the Ukrainians, who don't have a navy, have innovated maritime drones and have used missiles to take out the Russian ships. So another thing that's happened that no one knows about is that the Ukrainian special forces penetrated 1,000 miles into Russia to blow up two different railroad routes between China and Russia. And so the two main railroad routes between China and Russia, which are very far away from Ukraine, are both gone. And I'm sure they're repairing them, but it gives you a sense of, you know, when Biden didn't deliver the weapons that the Ukrainians needed to do their counteroffensive, they found other ways to be successful.
Well, that's impressive.
Yeah, and it's funny, you don't hear those stories. I mean, I think that's news that needs to be.
We're not hearing a lot anymore. It's kind of like Ukraine, blah blah blah.
Yeah, you hear a quick little soundbite that, you know, there was an attack or whatever.
Yeah, there's not a tremendous amount
of
information.
You don't hear.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah. Well, that's the frustrating part for me. I've been in the United States for 2 months now I've been spending a lot of time in Washington, D.C., talking to my former colleagues on Capitol Hill and telling them what I'm telling you. And so I'm seeing the news media here in the United States, and I'm just like, again, every story is today something blew up in Ukraine, today something blew up in Ukraine. When Russia pummels Kyiv with missiles, it's front page news. When Ukraine destroys, you know, much of the Black Sea fleet, no one hears about it. So it's really frustrating because, Ukraine has been winning where it has the weapons it has. It needs, so if it has the weapons, it succeeds.
Yeah.
And where it doesn't have the weapons in some cases, it designs them. These maritime drones that are blowing up these Russian ships are innovative, you know. And you're taking a $50,000 maritime drone and you're blowing up a $20 million ship with it. So,
That's a pretty good conversion.
Exactly. So
worth it. Hold that thought. Let's take one last break, and then we'll follow up with you to the top of the hour. And we need to pitch this, kind of get people back in the playing field, and maybe during the break give some thought to resources that would be good for people, so they can do their own. I mean, you know, they don't have to believe all of us. They can go do their own homework, but I think it'd be useful to point folks to the right, you know, maybe to some helpful places, because obviously they're few and far between right now. Yep. You are listening to We the People. Our guest is Stephen Moore, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Freedom's the answer. What is the question? Resist the advances of force and aggression, and leave to your children the promise of something more. God is my witness, I'll be a slave no more. Who's to say I can't do everything? Well, I can try. And as I roll along, I begin to find things aren't always just what they seem. I wanna turn the whole thing upside down. I'll find the things they say just can't be found. I'll share this love I'll find with everyone. We'll sing it.
Upside down indeed. So, Stephen, if people were going to go do, you know, maybe they feel like, well, gee, maybe I'm not getting the whole story, you know? Maybe there's more to this. Where would you... I know there's like a million resources, but what would you point them to, and what would you, what are the red flags for you're kind of getting hoodwinked, like you were talking about in the first hour?
Yeah, sure. Great question. Thank you. My Substack, and going back to the shame of self-promotion.
Good. Love it.
Substack. Yeah, exactly. Substack.com. Stephen in Kyiv. That's Stephen in Kyiv, and Stephen in Kyiv, and so you can get a bunch of good stuff there. Everything I do is data-driven, based on my first-hand experience talking to people. One of the things I would say is that there's a lot of people talking about Ukraine that have never been there. And so look at people. When someone is telling you something, say, is this person using first-hand information? Has this person been to Ukraine? And if the answer is no, then they don't have any more insight into what's going on than you do.
Huh? Good point.
So look for the people that have been there or are there now, and anyone else that has not been there, you know, look at them with a grain of salt. Is that my mix of my metaphors? Look at them with a grain of salt, whatever.
We can do whatever we want.
English is a living language.
Yeah, exactly. And all the rules are never. They're only rules until they're not the rule anymore. Being homesick, you watch some of this TV and you realize in a lot of our especially our true crime stuff, we have to subtitle our own citizens. So that's a bad trend too.
Yeah, exactly. Other folks that are doing good work out there is Jim Garrity at the National Review. He's been to Ukraine more than once, and so he is doing really good work. His coverage is quite good. There's another guy named Michael Rashawn, and he has a TV program, Rock Rashawn. That's RockRachon. He's a Polish broadcaster, and it turns out that Polish TV is the second most watched English TV program in Europe after the BBC.
Spell him again for me, would you?
Yeah, Rock Rashawn is the name of his show, RockRachon. And so he is someone that the Polish TV, obviously, they are following it very closely because
they're next door.
See themselves as next on the plate, yeah.
Yeah.
Julian Melchior at the Wall Street Journal does good work. There's the Hudson Institute, Luke Coffey, C-O-F-F-E-Y, also does really good work. And if you're on Twitter, then there's a guy named Jay N. Keeve, J-A-Y-I-N-K-Y-I-V, and Jay's a good guy. He's got 58,000 followers, and he has been in Ukraine for many years. He's American. And he puts a lot of good information out.
Oh, that's fun. See, because there are a lot of people who are willing to do the research, but, you know, it's funny. Back when we were all kids and the news was on for an hour, you know, you got an hour's worth of info. Now we have 7,000 channels that are on 48 hours a day. And, you know, then you add all the rest of the stuff to it. And so you never know who's telling the truth, who's not. And there's so much of it. People just get, I think they just, it's like a tidal wave. It's easier.
Yeah.
It's easier to walk away and go, I don't know. I think it's probably bad.
Yeah.
I think we should fix the southern border. I think we should stop giving them money. So if somebody's representative has a vote up on this issue, and somebody wanted to be, you know, proactive about this, and ask them questions and maybe advocate. What would you have them do if you were kind of doing the marching army there?
if you want to see things in Ukraine solved with U.S. weapons rather than U.S. troops, then you know call your member of Congress and tell them that. If you want to push back against the four horsemen of the apocalypse, and which I mean Russia, China, Iran, and North Korea, if you want to push back on those folks and make sure that the length of time before another major war is longer, contact your representative and tell him that, you know, you want him to support Ukraine so that American troops aren't going there later.
Okay. And for those people that, we're never going to sway everybody, right? We're never going to pull everybody on this thing. But what do you think I don't even know how I want to ask this. What do you think it's trending, I guess, since you're an observer on the ground, right? How are we trending there?
In terms of the war or in the United States or on Congress?
How about yes?
Well, so,
come on, you have 8 minutes.
Yeah. Well, here's what we got. So right now, President Biden wants to put four things into a bill and vote on them together. What's Ukraine aid, Taiwan aid, Israel aid, and border security. And you know what needs to happen is that the administration needs to stand up against the far left wing of its party, which is the folks that just want to let anyone and everyone come across the border for whatever reason, and which has kind of got us in the mess we are now. So this is something that should be a layup for the Democrats to vote on these things. You know, the Republicans, rightly so, are very much interested in border security. And so it should be easy to get, and most of Americans, three-quarters of Americans, are sitting more border security. So this should be an easy vote for the Democrats, and this should pass. But there's some obstacles to that. And that is, you know, can we get past the far left and get them to do a reasonable border security reform? So that's one thing that we're looking at. And what we see in Ukraine is that when you give the Ukrainians the weapons they need, they win. And we gave them the weapons they needed early on. You know, listen, I've been a lifelong Republican. I've worked for Republican members of Congress. I've worked on Republican campaigns all my life. And, I got to say, in the first year, in 2022, I had very little negative to say about the Biden administration and their ability to wage war in Ukraine and to send the weapons that the Ukrainians needed. But they haven't done that in 2023. And so the Ukrainians have taken large swaths of land back. They've taken back all but 17% of their territory. And they, the Biden administration has slow-walked weapons since then. And, you know, it took them 10 months to get M1, A1, Abrams tanks to Ukraine. And there were only like 31 of them. And these were appropriated by Congress, so it's not like controversial to send them over there. But, they were promised in January, and they arrived in October. What is the job of the U.S. Department of Defense if not to get weapons to a war zone quickly? And, you know, similarly, we're taking the slow route on the F-16s. There's a guy named General Breedlove, and he's a great guy. I'd urge your listeners to listen to him. He used to be the Supreme Allied Commander in Europe. And General Breedlove says that if you're a NATO commander and you were undertaking the counteroffensive like the Ukrainians undertook, you'd want air superiority, artillery superiority, and you'd want numbers superiority. And the Ukrainians did not have any of those, and yet they tried it because they have no choice. And why didn't they have those? Because the Biden administration has been slow-walking weapons. And it's been a weird thing with the Biden administration is that they don't send the weapons quickly, and then they criticize the way that the Ukrainians are fighting. And, as of July of last year, the Ukrainians had only gotten 15% of the mining equipment they had requested. And so, why is that? I don't know.
What is the purpose of that? I mean, what's the advantage there? What do they get from that?
Well, the general sense of things is that the Biden administration doesn't want Ukraine to win. They want Ukraine not to lose. Mm. And so because
those are different.
Yeah, exactly. The idea is that we have to prop up Russia for some reason, and I don't really get that. But they're afraid of Russia losing. And so, it's Kissinger also said these sort of things. I don't really understand it, but so the idea is that so right now what's happening is that the Biden administration is dribbling out weapons. And you know what you've got to remember is that Putin is a bully. Putin is a thug. Putin doesn't understand diplomacy. Putin understands strength. If he's stronger than you, he will take advantage of that. If he is if you come to negotiate with him, he will tell you what you want to hear, and then he'll do what he's going to do anyway. And, you know, Putin is already in violation of, you know, half a dozen treaties and a couple of dozen ceasefires in Ukraine. So the idea that we can negotiate a peace with Putin is absurd, because we've been doing that for about 20 years, and he is in violation of multiple agreements, peace agreements and ceasefire agreements. And so what happens is if we, you know, again, I've told you that Putin's warfighting capability has been degraded by 60 to 70% at this point. But he's now gearing up his economy to replace that. And so if we give him, say, a two-year hiatus, he's just going to build back his forces, and he's going to come at it again, because Putin wants to reinvigorate the Russian Empire. He wants to reunite the Soviet Union. And so...
Yeah, which seems a little transparent, but it seems pretty clear. I mean...
Yeah.
Do you think that
you got it.
The reason they don't want Russia to lose is there may be somebody worse waiting in the wings to take his place?
It would be hard to be worse than Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, I agree.
I think, yeah, and and people say that, and I think there's a small, you know, I mean, how could Putin get any worse? He's already trying as hard as he can to take over Ukraine, and he's already said that Europe is next. And there's a question: will he use nuclear weapons? And you know, and I'm if he uses nuclear weapons, Kyiv is probably one of the first targets. So I am quite literally staking my life on the idea that he's not going to do that. And here's why: China has told him not to do it. And you know, it's one
hopefully
thing
that counts.
If you use nuclear weapons. What's that?
I said, hopefully that counts. Yeah. Gosh, on that perilous note, Stephen, we're getting cut off by the news.
All right. Well, it's been fun. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Thanks for coming on, Stephen.
We really appreciate it. Please come on with us anytime, and anybody else you think needs to get their message out, love to have them.
Yeah.
The commercial free archive is available for your use and all that here this afternoon. You can find it at WeThePeopleRadio.us. Thanks, Stephen.
Come on.